there are two distinct categories, clearly distinct categories, the category of spirit and the category of matter. And there is a tension point of these two. Now, these two can happily coexist in the same place and at the same time. That's totally possible. But there's also a tension. There's a tension between these two worlds, between these two clearly different categories, distinct categories. And what is the point where these two collide? It is the very self. The very self. When I say self, I mean over here, and for you that'd be right there, and for him it'd be right there. Hope he's not going to be too bored usually. You know, it's not awfully too entertaining for the kids. They like lollipops and stuff better. Maybe some bunny bouncing around. Or next time I'll bring a hat with big ears. I'm going to shake it a little bit. So kids can have some fun too. The spirit and matter meet at this one point called Atma, or the self. So this is the tension point. Now, what is this tension? What's the nature of this tension? Well, the self, how do we conceive of the self? If we conceive the self as matter, we are going to experience certain circumstances, consequences. Oh, by the way, those of you who are sitting in chairs, could you please turn around and make sure that the chairs aren't touching the wall? We just repaired and fixed the wall. If you see those marks behind, that's all because of the chairs. Yeah, okay, thank you. Identifying oneself with matter will have certain consequences, and identifying oneself with spirit will have certain consequences. Now, this particular event, Christmas, no matter what it might have by now turned into and have become, originally in its pristine form is a spiritual event, is a purely spiritual event. Okay. Now, over here at our own very selves, we have this tension. Okay. What is the tension? The tension is... the tension is that we're making a material identification while maintaining spiritual needs, if you follow. Okay? We're maintaining two contradictory things, and therefore the tension. We have spiritual needs. Every living entity has primarily spiritual needs. Yet we're maintaining material identity. So we're identifying ourselves with the pile of matter, meaning the body, while having purely distinct spiritual needs. No amount of matter can ever quench this or satisfy these spiritual needs. And this is the tension point. So sometimes, you know, when we suffer materially, then we turn a little bit to the spiritual side. And then we feed ourselves spiritually, okay? And then when we're satisfied, then we again go back to the world of matter, identify ourselves as a material thing, and live life materialistically. Very often people call that religion. Where you can live a materialistic life, and then when it hurts, you satisfy it a little bit with by the means of religion. Now, there are many problems when we identify ourselves with matter. One thing which I thought of today, because it's a Christmas day and traditionally it's a big family day. Somehow it's become a big family day, even though Christ was very much into renunciation. Anyhow, it's all cool. We'll go with the flow. he made statements. I came to take you away from your family, meaning like become a renunciate. Anyhow, some other time about that. One thing I was thinking about today on this day when people are so much family conscious is what is one of the major reasons why people enter this, what should we call it, this contract called the family. It's a sort of a contract, that's what it is. Actually some people even do sign documents and stuff, but it is a contract. Why do people do that? There are many, many reasons, and I just wish to list one today. When one lives a life, a materialistic life, when one identifies oneself with matter, and therefore thinks that the goodness, the success, is to provide materially for the self, one actually lives a life, life that is intrinsically selfish. Because the moment you think yourself a material product, in your mind, in your psyche, in your deepest emotions, you're convinced that the material acquisition is the most important acquisition. And everything else is at best second place. That means it gives you right to be selfish. And people even say that. I remember a song when I was a child. This is in the song, a guy singing to his wife, you know. We used to love each other, blah, 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 and now let me go so I can love again. You know, let me off the hook so I can love again. This is selfishness. And for the most part, people that you meet in this world, maybe even some of you are thinking, yeah, that's perfectly okay. Let the guy go and let him live his life, enjoy himself. However, selfishness is intrinsically, not by the code of religion, not by the code of any society, it is by the universal code. It's intrinsically immoral. It is wrong, and therefore it hurts. So therefore, when one is absorbed in this life of selfishness, concentrated or extended selfishness, doesn't matter. But if the selfishness is the focus, one basically lives a valueless life. In the following sense, why does any society, any group of people appreciate an individual? Because that individual has done some service to the society. Every time anyone here appreciated anyone else was because that someone else has done something as an act of service, which is an act of selflessness. Now, when you live a selfish life, you basically live a life where no one gives a darn about you. Okay? And if anyone does give a darn about you, that's only because they can get something out of you. Now, why do people, when they create an art, why do they want to show it to the rest of the world? Or anything. Anything anyone has ever created, no one just concealed it and decided no one should ever know about it. As a matter of fact, it's quite the opposite. Someone paints a painting and immediately they... Well, nowadays you put everything on Facebook, but... You go to a gallery and have a, what you call it, have a show. You invite people to come and look at your art. Why do people do this? Why? Think psychologically. Why are you thinking helmets? Did you bring them?
I'm not too sure if this is the answer to your question, but me as an artist.
Oh, you're an artist, okay.
I feel like singing all, you know, every single thing that is given to me is given to me by God.
No, that's okay. But why particularly anyone wants to show something? Why not just conceal it? Why show it to the world?
Because they want others to appreciate it?
Correct, yeah. They want others to appreciate. Without others' appreciation, it is dead. If you're the only person that has ever witnessed that art. That art could might as well be dead or not have ever come into existence. So similarly with our lives, unless there's someone to appreciate, acknowledge our existence, we might as well not have taken birth. And people want that. And it's okay, it's normal, it's natural to be recognized that there is someone that will say, that will give you a gift. I mean, what's the point of a gift? Like today I got some funniest of all gifts ever. That was so materially valueless. But they were very funny, made me laugh for about an hour. So, what was the value in it? Some stuff was just recycled cloth. Yeah, okay. I can't go back to that. I'll start laughing again. Like, no material value in it whatsoever. But the value was that someone remembered that Dharna exists. And someone was happy that I exist. So we need this. Everyone psychologically needs this. But when you live a darn life of condemned life of a materialist, which is what almost everyone lives, no one gives a darn about you. And how do you solve this? Get yourself a spouse. Get yourself a spouse. People even say this. I don't want to be alone for the rest of my life. Basically, it means I'm going to enter this contract with another person and we're going to be professionally praising each other, you know, giving each other, pumping each other's self-esteem so we can continue living this darn existence. That's one of the very prominent psychological reasons why people enter this union. I think that's pretty pathetic. And it is a punishment to those who are living life of materialism. And when I say punishment, I'm not thinking of some kind of a cop, a universal police officer that goes around and punishes everyone randomly the way he or she is pleased to do. But this is because materialism is selfish and it's objectively nasty. Therefore it hurts. And this is just one little tiny aspect of or result of materialism. That no one cares about whether you exist or not. So let me get a child, let me get a wife, let me get a husband, you know, gather a few people around me and, you know, we'll enter this contract where we'll be appreciating each other's existence. So that there is at least someone in the world to recognize that I exist. This is the condemnation of a materialistic life. And there are many, many, many more. Another one that I can think of right now is that the material resources, which are the object of fight for materialists, are finite. They're finite, they're hard to come by, and therefore every single war, every single fight, every single concern nearly always was about this tension between who's going to get it, who's going to come to possess it. And then people hurt each other. People say that there are religious wars. People say religion is bad. Many people are ready to say this, that religion is bad, and the proof is that there have been so many religious wars. There has not been a single religious war in the history of the universe. These were all materialistic wars, where one group of people wanted to gain control over another group of people, and even more specifically, over the natural resources that are under the control of the other group of people. And they call that religion. That's the same people, same type of materialists, They just wave a religious flag. Same type of folks. So I'd like to tell you a story. It's a Christian story. So I thought, hey, it's a Christmas, so let me tell you a Christian story. It's about a prophet. A prophet who went on pilgrimage. And he was accompanied by pilgrims. So as they were traveling on pilgrimage, they felt hungry. So the prophet sent one of the pilgrims to a nearby village to get some food. And he gave him a little bit of money. Because they were pilgrims, they were on pilgrimage for a while, and this was a prophet who lived a simple life of renunciation, didn't have much money, so he gave him just a little bit of money. The pilgrim went to the village, bought three loaves of bread, and then started to walk back. But his stomach was complaining. So he decided to eat one loaf of bread. And after eating one loaf of bread, he made it back to the camp, presented two loaves of bread to the chief, to the prophet. And when the prophet saw two loaves of bread, somehow or other he knew, and he said, "Where is the third loaf of bread?" So the pilgrim said, "There were only two." So prophet said nothing. They just continued traveling on pilgrimage. So after a while, by the bidding of the prophet, they caught a deer, killed it, cooked it, and ate it. And then when they ate the deer, the prophet stood up. And he said, "By the power of Almighty, may this deer come back to life." And to everyone's surprise, the deer came back to life and ran off into the forest. Everyone was amazed. Then the prophet turned towards the pilgrim who was sent to get bread. And he said, "By the power of the one who made this deer come back to life, who ate the third loaf of bread?" There were only two. So the prophet didn't say any further anything. They just continued with their journey, continued with their pilgrimage. Then they came upon a river. The river was flooded, bridge was destructed. So the prophet said, "Hold my hands and hold each other's hands." So they formed a chain. And he said, "Just follow me." And they walked, every single one of them, walked on water and crossed the river. When they all crossed the river, they're all marveling, "My God, this is a miracle. We just walked on water." So the prophet turned towards the pilgrim who was sent to buy bread. And he asked him, "By the power of one who made us walk on water, who ate the third loaf of bread?" "There were only two." So, okay, cool, whatever. They continued. So after a while, they found themselves in the desert. And the prophet gathered up some sand and made the three large piles of sand. He raised his hands and he said, "By the power of Almighty, may these three piles of sand turn into three piles of gold." And they're all three piles of sand turned into three piles of gold in front of everyone's eyes. Then the prophet said, "One pile for me, other pile for you. Don't misspend it. Third pile is for one who ate the third loaf of bread." So the guy came out. "It was me." Then the prophet told him, "You can keep all three piles of gold. but you cannot continue with us on pilgrimage. So they all left, leaving the materialistic pilgrim behind. Who didn't mind at all? He was very happy to be left alone with three piles of gold. He was just thrilled. He was daydreaming, how will I spend this in numerous ways? And then three thieves come by and just kill the guy. Right away, no questions asked. They just did the math. Three piles of gold. Here's the guy, he's extra. Eliminate him. Killed him right away. Now they were very happy. So they danced for a while. And then they sent one of the thieves, to go to the nearby village to buy some food. So he went to the village, bought some food, and on the way back he was thinking, I should poison this food. So when the other two eat it, there'll be three piles of gold left just for me. And he did it. He poisoned the food. And when he arrived to the camp, the other two jumped him and killed him. Because as he was thinking how to get rid of them, they were also thinking how to get rid of him. So they killed him and they celebrated by eating the food. 2 minutes later, they were all dead. Then the prophet, in the meanwhile, he returned to that spot with all the pilgrims. And there were the three piles of sand and four dead bodies. So talking to his pilgrims, he pointed the scene. And he said, look at the three piles of gold, look at the three thieves, and look at the dead body of our pilgrim. He said, this is the way of the world. And this is the destiny of those who covet it. Isn't it? And it is just like that. Killing, lying, poisoning, cheating. Big time or small time, but it's going on all the time. And it's like little insects constantly biting, biting, biting. And just like these materialists in the story couldn't care less for each other, similarly in the modern world, materialists don't care for each other. They care only as much as the other person can provide for them. So I'd like to read something to you from, this is my last Christian quote for today. This is a quote from a book written by a Christian monk. And he said that the beginning of love is truth. Okay, this is very dense, so you have to very carefully listen. The beginning of love is truth, and before he is capital, he's referring to God. And before he will give us his love, God must cleanse our souls of the lies that are in them. And the most effective way of detaching us from ourselves is to make us detest ourselves as we have made ourselves by sin. If you don't like Christian terminology, just translate whatever terminology you like. We don't think there is sin, call it materialism, whatever else you want to call it. In order that we may love him reflected in our souls as he has remade them by his love. So what he is saying here, in order to ultimately experience the divine love, the love of God, the spiritual love, one cannot love the materialistic self. One has to be disgusted with the materialistic self. We're pretty good at being disgusted with other materialistic selves. But the point here is that we need to be disgusted with our own materialistic self. Detest it, disgust it, despise it, not like it at all, hate it. As we have made ourselves by sin. That's what we need to not like. That's step number one. Once that step is made, then there is an opening for the spiritual life to come in. And that is the only blessing, really, that you can ever give to anyone. And that is the only blessing that anyone can really receive. Everything else is a curse. Everything else is a curse because it takes you right back into the life of materialism. You're just a pain in the butt for everyone else, and they're all pain for you. Like a bunch of envious and angry bees who fight over honey. So Srila Rupa Goswami, one of the saints in our line, in our tradition, he compared materialistic or material satisfaction to a prostitute. Why prostitute? Because it gives you little pleasure and takes your money away. So said that material pleasure is like a prostitute. And what is the money here? Money means value. The only value ever is by nature spiritual. So that's what it does. Just makes you an addict, ruins your life, gives you a little pleasure, but splits, takes off with your money, empties your pockets. Okay, I guess I can stop here. I had one more quote from the Bhagavad Gita, but it's okay. I think I'll just leave it right there. Are there any questions or comments, perhaps, from the esteemed audience? So, Merry Christmas. Gee, it takes like an hour to explain what you mean nowadays when you say Merry Christmas. For the most, that means, you know, let there be plenty of something to eat, something to rub into your eyes, into your ears, into your skin, and it's just materialism, left and right. Small or big. Oh, it's just innocent, people say. Well, it's a disease. Might be small right now, but like any other disease, it tends to spread. And then when people get an opportunity, they'll go for it. Yes, Prabhu.
You know, so there are people who use Bhagavad Gita to justify material life. You know, there are many, many arguments, you know, quoting out of context or in context. What do you say to them?
Depends what they said. You know, number one, to have a conversation, you have to have two willing people to communicate. If you have just one person willing to communicate, then it's not enough. So sometimes people just have to be left to see where the train of materialism leads. And then when they're sick and tired of it, they may be ready to hear. So if they're ready to hear, if they're ready to have a... Not that you're going to talk at them, but conversation, communication means that, okay, let us put our ideas on the table and let us objectively analyze them and see which one is superior. As a teenage boy, the first Vedic text I read was Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Purana. And right in the beginning, the Bhagavad Purana begins, Dharmasya hyapavargasya narto arto yupakalpate nartasya dharmakantasya kamo labayahi smritaha, that One should not engage in dharma. Dharma means religion, means spirituality, means duty, means a lot of things. All of that, one should not engage in dharma for the sake of material profit. And if material profit ever comes your way, you should never use it for sensual gratification. What should you do with it? Kamasya nendriya priti, lavo jiveta yavata, jivasya tatva jigyasa, narto yak cheha karma vihi. You should use it to maintain the soul and body together. In other words, just to maintain, you know, physical vitality. And don't exceed that. In other words, basic needs, provide for basic needs. You probably have family, so that means also providing for your family. And then what do you do with the rest of your time and energy? Because if you're maintaining this body, why are you maintaining it? Jivasya tattva jigyasa. One should try to stay alive simply for tattva jigyasa, for the inquiry into the absolute truth. Narto yak cheha karma bihi. Nothing else is worth your endeavor. That's the beginning of the Bhagavad Purana.
So why do you say,
beautiful.
So why do you say to people who say this is Kali Yuga, so you are allowed to do
this? What do they say?
This is Kali Yuga,
mm-hmm.
So you are allowed to do whatever.
You're allowed to do, who allowed you to do whatever you want? Okay, let's have a role play here. You're making a statement that you're allowed to do whatever you want, and I'm asking who allowed you to do whatever you want.
You know, they can quote out of context and say, you know, basically Krishna told Arjuna, you do, you know, this soul is permanent, you do your duty, and they basically interpret it as, you know, my duty is all this material energy.
We just spent some time explaining that. People also have to be rational if you want to have a communication. That's another thing of materialism. The Krishna says in the Gita, Boga Ishvarya Prasaktanam Taya Apahrita Chetasam. That when you become attached to material opulence and enjoyment, you become irrational. And you don't mind being irrational. Like people who are just attached to eating meat. No matter how much reason you present to them, how that's hurting another living entity, how it's immoral, and billions of reasons, they just don't care. And I had people tell me, I don't care. What do you say further? They don't care.
So which sloka are you referring to specifically?
The one that I just quoted, Bhogeshwar Prasaktanami, it's 240 something. I'll look it up for you. And can we entertain another question in the meanwhile? I think there was one more hand, then we can end there. I stole your attention.
Well, I just wanted to say something here. You know, I am not a wife nor a mother,
mm-hmm.
but I'm definitely a witness to know that spiritual life can definitely be embodied in the family life.
Oh, certainly, certainly, yeah. Most certainly, yeah. What I was saying is that when family life is a beautiful thing. I mean, what do you think? How did I come about? How did I get this body?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I have a mother and I have a father, for God's sake. but the point is that something so beautiful can be so perverted just because you start up as a materialist. That is the point. And you know, such a pain, such a nasty thing comes about just because you have this immoral outlook.